This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And we have another wonderful show for you today. Ryan, who are we speaking with?
Today we're speaking with Robin Sharma. Robin Sharma is the globally celebrated author of 11 international best-selling books on leadership, including The Leader Who Had No Title, the phenomenal number one blockbuster that is inspiring a movement around the idea that now anyone in any organization can show leadership. His work has been published in over 60 countries and in nearly 70 languages, making him one of the most widely read authors in the world. He shot to fame with The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, which has topped international bestseller lists and sold millions of copies. Robin is the founder of Sharma Leadership International, Inc., a global consultancy that helps people and organizations lead without a title. Clients comprise of many of the Fortune 500, including Microsoft, GE, Nike, FedEx, and IBM. Organizations such as NASA, IMD Business School, Yale University, and the Young Presidents Organization are also Sharma Leadership International clients. Robin is a former litigation lawyer who holds two law degrees, including a Master's of Law. And Robin is also going to be our Golden Gavel recipient at the Toastmasters International Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada this August. So Robin Sharma, first of all, welcome to the show and congratulations on the Golden Gavel Award.
Thank you, Ryan. Yes. Thank you, Bo. Just an incredible, incredible honor for me to receive that. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And an honor to have you on with us today. So to start off the conversation, Robin, we wanted to ask you, the title of your new book is certainly thought-provoking, The Leader Who Had No Title. And so often we assume that a title is essential for leadership, whether it's a manager, supervisor, CEO, or even in our fine organization of Toastmasters, we have club presidents and area governors, district governors. So how can someone as a Toastmaster or anyone else be a leader without a leadership title or position?
Well, you know, really what The Leader Who Had No Title is about is the new model of leadership. I call it Leadership 2.0. And the old model of leadership, which basically said you're defined by your title on your business card, you need to be a CEO to make a difference, is obsolete. That actually comes from an old model based on command and control. Mm-hmm. And any Toastmaster or any organization or any entrepreneur that really wants to win in this new crazy wire world we're in really has to embrace what I call leadership 2.0, which is you can lead without a title now. You can, no matter what you do in an organization, no matter what you do within your community, you can still work like Picasso painted. You can still influence like, you know, the best in the world at what you do. And so that's really the essence of leading without a title. It's, you know, no longer playing a victim and making excuses for not making a difference and not inspiring people. It's basically looking in the mirror saying, I might not have a title, but I can still have an impact and then going out there and doing it.
Mm. And of course, you wrote a whole book to explain this and do, you know, seminars and workshops. But could you tell us a little bit about how you do that? If you don't have the title, you want to assert yourself as a leader, how can you do that and have other people recognize and respond to your leadership?
Well, one of the things I say in the book is leadership is really about three things. And leadership is not easy, but it's really, really simple. And the three things that leadership, especially leadership without a title, is all about is it's about being inspirational. I mean, I think regardless of your title, if you're not going to work and walking out into the world and leaving people more energized than you found them, then you're not leading. Second thing it's about having an impact. So, you know, victims talk and they make excuses and they complain. Leaders, regardless of their title, they get things done. They have an impact. And I've fallen in love with that word, having an impact, because that's what business and life is all about. And then finally, leadership is about influence. Herb Kelleher, the founder of that great company, Southwest Airlines, said, the business is people. And if you really want to win in business and you really want to have a fulfilling life and a happy life, because that's part of leadership too, it's about having an influence. It's about building relationships, those human connections that's so easy to lose in this world of Twitter and Facebook and, you know, online.
Right.
Robin, I know you speak and meet with leaders on a global basis, both those with titles and without titles. I'm wondering if you've found, irrespective of country or culture, any common questions, objections, concerns about this whole philosophy you have of leadership. Have you found any common threads?
Absolutely. I think two come to mind immediately wherever I go to speak around the world, whatever the organization might be. Number one, people say, well, you know, that's it. In theory, leading without a title is a great idea, but would it really work? And it wouldn't work in my culture, or it wouldn't work in my business because it's a family business and the boss makes all the decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing about excuses is the more you recite them, the more you own them for the rest of your life. I mean, I said this to my followers on Twitter the other day, but excuses are nothing more than the fears your doubts have sold you. And what I mean by that is a lot of us, deep down inside, you know, we've resigned ourselves to mediocrity because it's not because there's not a ton of opportunities out there. It's because we're scared. We're right. scared of change. We're scared of the unknown. We're scared of actually playing full out in our work or in our lives. So what do? We resign ourselves to mediocrity and we make all these excuses. So the number one thing I hear over and over is this excuse, which is, I don't have CEO on my business card, so I can't build the culture at my company, or I can't drive sales, or I can't inspire other people. Mm-hmm. The second thing that I hear when I go around the world is how busy people are. Well, you know, Robin, I'm too busy to build my team. I'm too busy to do, as Michael Gerber said so elegantly, he said, to work on the business versus in the business. I'm too busy to go out there and have lunch with my best customer and listen to her. I'm too busy to innovate my business model. I'm too busy to get up at 5 o'clock and work out on the treadmill so I dump endorphins into my bloodstream so I actually feel good and have great energy through the day. I'm too busy to spend more time with my family so I have a strong home foundation so I win at work. And you know, the fact of the matter is, leadership is about stripping away the noise and the friction and the chatter in this world of dramatic distraction and focusing on those few things that matter. And that's really what a lot of Leader Who Had No Title is about. It's about how do you strip away all the shiny toys and distractions and really focus on doing genius level work and creating a world-class life.
Interesting. Robin, you just mentioned a couple moments ago physical exercise and fitness. And I know from reading some of your writings, that's something that's near and dear to your heart. We don't often hear in the context of leadership training about being committed to physical exercise and health. Why do you feel that that's so important? I think, as a matter of fact, there was a quote on your site that said something to the effect that the strongest leaders are the fittest leaders.
I think it was just exercise is good.
Oh, is that what it was?
He likes to exercise.
Exactly. You know, You're right. I think you read a lot of great business books and they talk about strategy and building a great team or a great culture or selling. But, you know, I'm getting ready to give this program coming up called the Remarkable Entrepreneur Super Conference. And one of the key things I'm going to be teaching to these entrepreneurs who really want to get their business to a whole new level and their lives to a whole new level is that your number one asset as an entrepreneur or as a leader or as a human being is not your time. Your number one asset to protect in this busy world is your energy. So it doesn't matter how great a product you have, or how great a service you have, how many great opportunities you have. If you wake up at 6 or 7 in the morning and you're exhausted, then you're going to telegraph that exhaustion to your whole team and all your customers. If you can't execute around your great ideas, then you're not going to achieve any results at all. So anyone who really wants to double their profit or double their productivity or double their happiness really wants to wrap their brain cells around the value of getting fit like Madonna. You know, really getting fit so that when you go out there to work or come home at 7 or 8 at night, you have so much energy that you can actually fly down your to-do list and create that world-class life. And just to be really tactical or granular, you know, one of the best things you can do is train your brain to get up at 5 o'clock. It'll take about 40 days to install that neural wiring. And after that, you'll have an hour every morning. And during that 1 hour, just like an elite athlete prepares for the big game or for his or her sport, you take 1 hour and you work out on a treadmill, you hydrate your body with water, you put some good information into your mind, and that way you will prepare yourself to for a truly high energy winning day.
Great.
Tell us a little more about that, Robin. How do you wire your brain to wake up at 5 a.m. every day?
Okay, well, you know, if you look at the latest science, they're realizing that the brain is a lot more plastic. And I hadn't planned to get into this, but you asked, and I'm happy to discuss it because I'm so passionate about it. The old model was very much, you know, the brain is static, and once you're, let's say, in your 20s or 30s, you can't really grow your brain a lot. Well, that is now a vampire myth. The truth of the matter is the brain is plastic, and we can actually grow the brain through new neural connections well into our advanced age. Here's the point I'm trying to make. You do anything for about 40 days, and you will actually install new wiring that will allow a new behavior to set into place. And all I'm suggesting is most people wake up in the morning, they don't really have that pre-game time to prepare themselves. I mean, could you imagine you go see U2 or Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber? I think you guys are Justin Bieber fans, aren't you?
How do you know? Nailed
I'm
us.
I'm just joking. But, you know, could you imagine going to see Madonna or U2 or Foo Fighters and they go, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to practice here on stage. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd want your money back. And if you're in business right now and you go to work, that's showtime. You need that 1 hour from 5 to 6 to prepare yourself mentally, physically, and emotionally, and spiritually so that you get to work and it's showtime.
Right.
Makes sense. Robin, what would you say to someone who is, again, not someone with a formal leadership position or title in their company or organization, and they want to step up and have some influence, but they feel they don't exude charisma naturally? I mean, would you say that charisma is an essential key to leadership? And if so, what can someone do to develop that quality?
I have no charisma and I think I've done okay. I'm just joking, but I'm serious actually. I don't think you need charisma. I think that is really a lot of the old model of leadership. The charismatic leader on the top of the mountain, you know, shouting out slogans and inspiring the masses. That's the old leader. You know, the new model of leadership is like the gentleman who came to our office a little while ago to install the carpet. His name was Bert. I shot a video of him. Anyone, if your listeners and viewers want to have a look at it, it's on YouTube. And basically, this is a gentleman. He didn't have a title. You might not say he was charismatic, but it was very, his excellence and influence was very quiet. Mm. And as he did his work, it was like he did the most important work in the world. And, you know, all joking aside, that to me is such a big idea, which is, you know, no matter what your job is, work like Picasso painted. And this man, Bert, was a quote-unquote ordinary person. He's been installing carpets for 55 years. I said, is your work important? He goes, it's unbelievably important. He sees his work as a craft, trying to make it better every single day. And I think the real takeaway on this charisma point is, you know, Bert didn't care about applause, because I think few things feel as good as the pride you feel on a job well done.
Right.
And so I don't think leadership's about charisma anymore. To me, it's about doing your best work regardless of the title. It's about, you know, standing for honor in a world that celebrates reality TV stars. You know, leadership is not about a title. It's about being the kindest person you know. It's about being the most persistent person you know. It's about standing for excellence in a world that's, you know, become the cult of mediocrity. To me, that's what leadership is about. It's not about charisma or fat paychecks or private jets.
Right. But I'll tell you what, Robin, I will bet you if Bert got up an hour early each day and exercised, he'd have more charisma.
You know, maybe so.
Robin, one of the things I love about your story is that you self-published your first two books before going on to becoming an international bestseller. And I was hoping you could share with us how you went from running off copies of your books at Kinko's Copy Shop to an internationally known leadership expert.
Well, you know, I'd love to, because I'm very much an ordinary person, and you know, I really want people to realize that when we look at these people, whether it's a Steve Jobs or a Bono or a Picasso or any of, you know, a Jimi Hendrix or Any of the great ones that are out there, they're all ordinary people who did certain things that most people don't do. And I said this to my followers on Twitter the other day, which is, if you want the result that only 1% of the population have, then you must be willing to do what only 1% of the population are willing to do. And what I'm suggesting is persistence is unbelievably important. I actually started off with The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, as you're saying, is a self-published book. Mm-hmm. And my mom was my editor. My father helped me sell the book, one book at a time, at fairs and out of the back of my car. And people laughed at me. You know, I think that's a key point on leadership. But, you know, again, I did a tweet, and it's if people don't laugh at you at least once every 7 days, then you're mm-hmm. probably not dreaming very big. Mm. And so, you know, people were laughing. They said, what does a lawyer know about writing a book or about leadership? And I persisted. I had a few hundred books in my kitchen in a small apartment. And, you know, I just got out there. I started speaking. I was actually very afraid of public speaking. You know, Toastmasters is all about, you know, expressing your ideas and creating success through expressing ideas and communicating and overcoming your fears. And when I was in law school, this could be relevant to your listeners, but I was really afraid of public speaking. But I just stayed with it, and I just persisted with it. When people read The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, my first seminar, small group of people showed up, but I stayed with it. And people, through word of mouth, people started reading this book and telling other people. I wasn't on Oprah, you know, or anything like that. And it just grew out into this word of mouth phenomenon that has led me to do what I do today.
Wow. So your book went viral.
The book, before Facebook and a world of YouTube,
yeah.
That book, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, just, you know, it just found its way into people's hands, and they buy copies for other people, and they just started telling people about it. And, you know, it was just a really fascinating process the way it all unfolded.
Yeah, oh, that's remarkable. I know your book has certainly touched a lot of lives. I'm wondering, Robin, what books have touched your life over the year and inspired you to be a better leader, better person?
Well, if you were to look at my home, you know, you'd see stacks of books everywhere. And because I adore learning. I adore books. I adore podcasts. You know, you guys do such a great podcast and inspire and help so many people. And learning is definitely one of the hallmarks of the great leaders. In terms of books that have really influenced me, you know, the biography of Warren Buffett. I mean, Warren Buffett to me is a great leader. What other books? As a Man Think. You've probably now it's renamed As You Think, which is a great book.
Right.
The autobiography of Benjamin Franklin is an incredible book. I could just go on and on because, like I say, I really love books.
Right. Dale Carnegie, is he on your list?
How to Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. Phenomenal book. I read those all. They were handed down from my dad.
It's good classics. Stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolute classics.
And Robin, I know you also promote coaching and mentoring, and a lot of people seek you, I guess, either personally or through your books and your other resources as a coach. But who do you consider as coaches and mentors? Who do you look up to in that regard?
Well, you know, my heroes are in many ways the readers of my books and the people who come to my events. And the reason I say that is learning is a great act of courage, because the very act of embracing a new idea means you're stepping out of your comfort zone into the brave unknown and actually challenging who you were yesterday, the way you thought yesterday, the way who you were yesterday. And so, you know, the people who I meet through my interactions, my readers and the audience members are people who are on this leadership journey. They're not playing victim in a world of victims. Mm-hmm. They're not making excuses. They don't stand for mediocrity. You know, these are people who want to play at their best. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to do genius level work. And I just really admire that. I really admire my parents. It's so interesting how often we take our parents or our mentors for granted until we lose them. I'm blessed to have two incredible parents who I really adore and who have encouraged me from the very beginning, and my two children. They're mentors to me as well. Someone once said, children come to us more highly evolved than adults to teach us the lessons we need to learn. And someone else also said that adults are nothing more than deteriorated children. And I learned so much about leadership and curiosity and what life is all about from my kids. So those would be some of the people who are inspiring me to continue along my leadership path.
Great.
Good.
Let's talk about Toastmasters, this coming event in summer, in August, in Las Vegas. Have you given any time to think about what you want to talk about?
I have, you know what I want to do more than anything else? I just want to share my story because it might be helpful to know that here was an unhappy lawyer in a job where I felt stuck, who was living a life that my neighbors might have thought was impressive, but I felt was completely artificial. And, you know, because that's in many ways what leadership is. It's about living life on your own terms and living your values and doing your dreams rather than what society and the world around you thinks you should be doing. Right. And I just want to share the story how, you know, every dream starts off small with that self-published book in a Kinko's coffee shop where, you know, I faced critics. And I remember being in bookstores where I had five books and I said, can you take these books on consignment? I'm an author. Here's the book. It's The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. I think your readers will like it. And so, you know, I remember one bookseller said, you know, go to the end of the line. I'm dealing with customers right here. You know, I don't have time for you. And, you know, I think, I'm not saying I'm a visionary, but any leader or a visionary has one thing in common. They believe so fiercely in a vision when the rest of the world around them can't see that vision that they stay strong and they pursue that vision until the rest of the world gets their vision. And I think, you know, I want to share my story and I want to share the critics and I want to make the point that, you know, if you're not disliked by at least a few people, then you're probably not doing genius level work. And if you don't attract the chattering voices of the critics around you, then you're probably not, you know, playing where you want to be playing. And I hope that story will inspire people. And then I'll probably give a bunch of specific tactics that will help people go out there and do their best work and create world-class lives.
Great. Is this similar to what you're going to be talking about at your Remarkable Entrepreneur Super Conference?
The Remarkable Entrepreneur Super Conference is basically 2.5 days designed to do two things. Number one, it's for entrepreneurs who want to double their profits in 16 months. And number two, it's for entrepreneurs who feel that they're really busy right now and they might be making money or they might not be making money and building great companies, but they also feel they're not really enjoying life. And it's really a system that I've taught to a lot of our clients that has really created those results for them. And for anyone who might be interested, they can just go to theremarkableentrepreneur.com. And there's a bunch of free videos that actually share a lot of the tactics, and the information on the event is also available.
Right. I like how you narrow that market down. Just not everybody, just for people who want to double their profits in the next 16 months. So all the people who aren't interested in doubling their profits or making more money, they're not. They wouldn't be interested in this.
Well, I think that speaks to a great point, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with building a highly profitable business, as long as you also make a dent in the universe, as Steve Jobs, one of the co-founders of Apple, said. I think a profitable business, you know, employs people and it does great things for communities, and it's part of the game of business as well.
Mm. Great. All right, Robin. Can you tell us where people could find out some more information about you? Where can people find out more information about Robin Sharma?
Absolutely. So the Leader Who Had No Title, anyone who's interested in that, they can just get it off of Amazon. Anyone who's interested in what I've said today and wants to learn more and get more of these ideas, they can follow me on Twitter, of course, on Facebook, and as well at robinsharma.com.
All right. Wonderful. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. We look forward to hearing your Golden Gavel recipient speech coming up in August. Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Viva Las Vegas. It's going to be beautiful. Can't wait.
I'm so excited about it. And it's honestly one of the greatest honors I've received in the 15 years I've been doing this. And, you know, I just say thank you to everyone for that. So, and it's been a pleasure talking to you two gentlemen as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Look forward to meeting you in person in Las Vegas.
We'll see you soon.
Really excited. Really excited. Thanks so much, Steve.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That was Mr. Robin Sharma, the Golden Gavel recipient for the year 2011. And you will have a chance to meet him in person if you, too, show up at the International Conference coming up here.
It's August 17th through 20th in Las Vegas, Nevada at Bally's Las Vegas Hotel.
Have you ever been there?
I've never stayed there, but I've been through Bally's. And I've been to Las Vegas, yes.
Been to Las Vegas, but not specifically that hotel.
Haven't stayed at Bally's, no. Right. No. Have you?
No. No. No, but all the hotels there are beautiful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And the buffets. All right. Do we have any listener feedback?
Indeed, we do.
All right. Look at that.
We received an email from Michael. Michael writes in and says, "Hey, Ryan and Bo, I really love the podcast. It is a must listen. I keep finding myself going back to a few of them to re-listen and pick up certain salient points, especially the one about giving feedback with Bob Terrell." He says, "I use that for most of that for a prepared speech, as well as the one where I think it was David Brooks gave advice of writing down the speech in full, internalizing it, and then going without notes. Very valuable. I will be giving my 10th speech, Inspire Your Audience, tomorrow, and I'd love to have some examples to work in, as I was wondering if you had a quick moment to answer the following question."
Oh, boy.
And Michael asks, and don't worry, Bo, I'll jump in and answer this one, okay, so you can relax. He says, "What opportunities have you been able to take advantage of due to your involvement in leadership at the club, area, or district level that you most likely would not have gotten otherwise?" And my personal answer for that is pretty simple. If it weren't for Toastmasters, I certainly wouldn't be here right now doing this podcast, which has been a tremendous honor. But also for our listeners who aren't aware, Bo and I are actually business partners. We've been working together since 2007, and that came out directly as a result of us meeting.
That's right.
Through Toastmasters and getting to be good friends and working on projects together at Toastmasters. So we got a good feel for each other's skill set and our ability to work together. So that's a testimony to Toastmasters for sure.
Good. And for me, I know if I were never area governor, mm-hmm, I would have never been lieutenant governor of marketing.
There you go. It's all part of the journey.
So what's question number two?
Well, he did have two questions, but he said we could answer just one of them.
Okay.
He says, "Thank you so much for your time and being an inspiration yourself. In respect, Michael."
Michael, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for writing in, Michael.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you.
All right. If you have any listener feedback, Ryan, how could they get it to us?
Like Michael, you can send us an email, podcast@toastmasters.org. You can give us a call on our voicemail feedback line. You have 2 minutes to leave a message. That's 1-888-451-8862. You can post on our blog at toastmasterspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @TheTMPodcast.
Great. Well, until next time, my name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And take care, everybody. We'll see you later.
See
Bye-bye.
Ya.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.